from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
CARICOM's chief negotiator declares himself satisfied with the new agreement between the ACP and Europe. Belize refuses to take its border dispute with Guatemala to arbitration, and a wider worldview of the Elian Gonzalez saga. I'm Oren Gordon, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. CARICOM's chief negotiator, Sir Shridath Ramphal, has pronounced himself happy with the new deal that will replace the Lome Trade and Aid Agreement between African, Caribbean and Pacific countries and the European Union. The new agreement was arrived at after some hard talking in Brussels between the EU and the ACP.
We have negotiated, first of all, a convention of 20 years' duration, which is twice as long as the longest Lome Convention. Most were 5 years, the last one was 10. This is 20 years. Within this time, we will negotiate what is to follow the trade regime in 8 years' time. We have negotiated a package of aid through the EDF of 13.5 billion euros over the first five-year period of the convention.
That's how many U.S. dollars?
Well, that is about that much in U.S. dollars, at 13.5 billion. To that, you have to add a number of billions. The principal one being 9 billion euros that have been unspent and uncommitted from previous Lome conventions, from previous EDFs. Now, that is scandalous. That has not been utilized. And the main reason for the non-utilization is the bureaucratic delays that have been attendant on EU aid to date. Now, Europe tells us that they are resolved, that their new procedures will ensure that these funds are in fact made available. So you are already getting up to over 20 billion euros.
So Shridath described a new investment facility as one of the really creative parts of the New Deal. He says it's available to both businessmen and the public sector.
This will be loan funds at a subsidized interest rate to assist the processes of productivity in the private sector and in these state enterprises. So there's a good deal here that is innovative. A lot of it is going to depend in terms of its value to regions like the Caribbean on how we use it. The negotiations have produced this opportunity. It is now going to be for us, for governments, for the private sector, for civil society, to ensure that it is used. To not be supine, not be apathetic, not let the initiatives come from Europe, but to take them ourselves.
So Shridath Ramphal. Guatemala has reopened the issue of its long-standing claim to Belize and is threatening to take the matter to the International Court. The threat has come from the new government of Alfonso Portillo, which took office last month. I spoke by telephone, with the Belizean Prime Minister Said Musa, who's in Mexico attending a meeting of finance ministers from the Americas. He told me it's unfortunate that Guatemala has reopened the matter of taking the dispute to arbitration, but Belize will not be going to the International Court.
As you're aware, for there to be an arbitration or a juridical solution, both parties would have to agree. And we have told the Guatemalans time and time again that there is no question of Belize agreeing to any arbitration or a court solution of this matter. As far as we are concerned, way back in the early 90s, in fact, Guatemala accepted the established land borders of Belize, accepted our independence and our sovereignty. We maintain that the only solution can come through a political dialogue at the highest level. And this was the message that I took to President Portillo.
Do you think it's almost the duty of each new administration to restate the claim when they come into office?
I suspect this is what is happening. It's a new government, and they are simply restating the old claim. But we are still hopeful that we can make progress through dialogue. And certainly on the part of Belize, this dialogue will be maintained. We have kept the leader of the opposition in our country briefed, so he's fully on board and aware of what is going on. We will now establish a national advisory commission to deal with this matter as on a national front level.
This is a long-standing Guatemalan claim, and talking in the past hasn't got you anywhere.
That is true, except that it did get us somewhere in 1991 when we were able to convince the then Guatemalan government to accept the independence and sovereignty of Belize and to establish diplomatic relations. It's unfortunate now that there seems to be a retrograde step, which, quite frankly, I find quite outrageous.
Do you ever entertain the thought that the claim may have some basis in justice, and would you contemplate giving up any part of Belize?
The claim has absolutely no basis in justice. It is one of those old legacies of the colonial rivalries. Neither Spain nor Guatemala at any time occupied or possessed any part of Belize. So it really has no juridical, legal basis whatsoever. It is a claim that is there, so we do have to negotiate and discuss the matter at the political level. But that's what it is, no more and no less.
Belizean Prime Minister Said Musa, you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. The St. Lucian Attorney General is suggesting that a fourth law school be set up, this time in the OECS. The suggestion comes at a time of concern that the law school intake in the Caribbean is too high. Pete Ninval reports.
Too many lawyers, too few places to train them. That was the dilemma facing the Executive Committee of the Caribbean Council on Legal Education when it met in St. Lucia recently. The council was established by CARICOM governments to manage and supervise a program of legal education in the region, particularly the process by which certificates are acquired to practice law after academic studies have been completed. St. Lucia's Attorney General, Senator Petrus Compton, says the council's executive committee considered a number of options, including placing restrictions on the class of degree obtained before automatic admission to law school, or placing quotas on the number of persons admitted to law school. Senator Compton says there was no shortage of ideas, but the problem is to find the option that best suits the region's needs.
I think, you see, most professions have a tendency to want to restrict the numbers entering the profession for reasons of oversaturation, for reasons of quality as well. If any and everybody can enter, entry is easy, then you have persons who perhaps may not quite make the grade entering and thereby sullying the quality of attention that one gives, of service that one provides. But I believe we will have to look fairly and squarely at the issue of a fourth law school very, very soon.
Senator Compton intends to push the idea of establishing a fourth law school when OECS attorneys general meet later this month. His idea is for the school to be established in the OECS, but even he is hesitant about how the proposal will be received.
One of the rhymes a little hesitant is that council is very clear. We do not want to encourage a plethora of law schools all over the region because you, again, would end up diluting the standards. So you have to be very careful that standards are maintained, and one has to therefore approach the matter cautiously.
The St. Lucia Attorney General feels if ever a law school is established in the OECS, it should cater to OECS nationals wishing to study law. This is Pete Ninval in Castries, St. Lucia for BBC Caribbean Report.
The Bahamas Press Club, the organization that represents reporters in the country, has taken the side of a reporter who was sentenced to 4 days in jail for contempt of court. Obi Wilchcombe, who is also an opposition senator, refused to disclose to the court how he obtained a suicide note from the death row prisoner John Higgs. Higgs slit his wrists just hours before he was due to hang. He left behind a letter accusing the government of using the death penalty for political ends. In court, they were trying to determine the cause of his death. The coroner, Winston Saunders, had asked Wilchcombe to tell him how he came by the note. I asked Ed Bethel of the press club whether the journalist was right to refuse to say how he got it.
I don't know if he was right to withhold it, but he is convinced that he should have held it, and I support him because he felt so strongly and he was prepared to risk going to prison for it. I stand by him for that.
As a journalist, I understand the principle that he is talking about, but what's the purpose of holding back on the letter? What purpose is it serving, not telling the authorities how he came to get it?
I don't know what purpose is served myself, but he feels that in court he told the coroner that if he told him where he got it, it would implicate where he got it and from whom he got it. I don't know why and whom he's protecting.
Will the Press Club of the Bahamas be backing him in his appeal to the higher court?
Yes, the Press Club is supporting him. All the members I met with last evening are in support of Obi's stance. In fact, we're going to church this weekend with him to worship and to pray that the outcome will be in his favor.
Is there a conflict of interest in Obi's case? He's an opposition politician. It can be argued by the government, by the authorities, that he had an interest in embarrassing the government by reading John Higgs's letter on air as he did.
I don't know if that is so. Yes, he is an opposition politician, but he wasn't being tried as a politician. He's been tried as a journalist. And I don't know how germane the evidence that he is withholding is to the case, to say that Higgs committed suicide. Now, I don't know why Obi's testimony is so important, although Winston Sun has said in court yesterday that he had stymied the entire hearings because he had refused to disclose where he got this letter. I don't know why he said that, but he was very, very adamant.
Ed Bethel of the Press Club of the Bahamas. While he's locked in battle over the past 2 weeks with the Prime Minister, the President of Trinidad and Tobago today launched the International Year of Peace for the United Nations. President A&R Robinson made no direct reference to the impasse, which was caused by his refusal to act on the advice of the Prime Minister, as the Constitution says he must, and fired two Tobago senators. He said it is his presidential duty to preserve the union of Trinidad and Tobago. The relatives of Elian Gonzalez have had to hold the building of a fence that they hoped would protect him from the constant glare of the media. Since he landed on U.S. soil, the boy has been at the center of a political tug-of-war between Washington and Havana. Virtually everyone in the U.S. has an opinion on what should happen to the six-year-old shipwreck survivor. And as BBC Caribbean reports, been finding out, they aren't the only ones.
I believe that that boy should be reunited with his one remaining living parent. His father is alive and is well in Cuba and ought to be reunited with his child. I believe that the Cuban lobby in South Florida is now rabid. I believe that they have gone too far, and I believe that were it not for the volatility of the U.S. electoral process presently, the boy would have been sent home a long time ago.
It's just a ridiculous story about this poor child. He is just a toy in all this story. He should say himself if he wants to go back to his father. This is the only thing necessary.
In my opinion, the child should stay in America, because that's where his future is. And since his father abandoned him, America is where his family is. His father didn't look after him before, and they weren't living together. So why should he care about him now?
Aside from the political conflict, we should ask the child what he thinks, what he wants to do, return to his father or stay with his family in Miami. But he's only 6 years old and easy to influence. It's difficult for him to choose. Despite what we hear of the problems of everyday life in Cuba, perhaps the child wants to live with his father. And if it's a question of love, that's the most important thing.
I'm a father. And as such, I would want my child back with me. I don't think it's a matter for political consideration. I think that the Miami Cubans are making it that. The Americans have made at least the move to have this special dispensation put through the Senate. I think it's a wrong move. I think it'll be seen in a very negative way by the Cubans. And if there's any hope for any political settlement with the Cubans, this is going to just make it that much more difficult.
A cross-section of worldviews on the case of Elian Gonzalez. Finally, the U.S. airline Continental is the latest to cut its commission to travel agents in the Caribbean from 9 to 6%. It'll come as a blow to regional travel agents who have seen similar cuts from American Airlines, British Airways, and Air Jamaica. More on that story in our Monday editions of BBC Caribbean Report. But that's it for now. Before we go, here's a quick reminder.
This and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
Thank you very much for listening. This is Orin Gordon saying goodbye from London.
O Big Ben marca 9 horas e 30 minutos aqui em Londres.